on the telephone line, we have Marie Klippenstein, who is the lawyer representing the Ecuadorian village that is suing Copper Mesa, two of its executives, and the Toronto Stock Exchange. Let me give you a little background into the story. Last year, March 6th, 2009, we interviewed Marie Klippenstein and Carlos Zarrilla on this show. Marie Klippenstein was the lawyer for Carlos Zarrilla and Marcia Ramirez, who are community activists from the Intag area of Ecuador and who visited Canada from the 25th of February until the 7th of March last year as part of a tour to announce lawsuits against the Canadian Mining Company and the Toronto Stock Exchange. In that year's time since, we have these updates. In January of 2010, the Toronto Stock Exchange delisted the Canadian Mining Company in question, Copper Mesa, and as a result, the company lost about 60% of its stock value over the next 48 hours. Now, on March 25th, 2010, that court case opened in Canadian court. The Ecuadorian village, represented by three plaintiffs, is suing the Toronto Stock Exchange, the Canadian Mining Company, and two Copper Mesa company directors. Joining us on the telephone line right now is their lawyer, Marie Klippenstein. Marie, how are you this morning, sir?
Very well, thanks.
Now, the first thing that is most surprising to a lot of people, especially mining activists and anti-mining activists from within the Canadian community, is that this case made it to trial. That didn't just happen with a snap of fingers. That is a result of a lot of hard work on your part. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the process about getting this case to trial, and then we can talk about the successes of the trial so far.
Sure. You're running a little ahead of the schedule in terms of your admirable optimism. We are not at trial yet, and that'll be years away, but we certainly were in court yesterday, and that went very well. One of the things about a lawsuit like this is it just takes years and years and years. When we went to Ecuador and met in the mountains with the village people and leaders, we made that clear, and they understood that, and they view it as a long-term thing. They're trying to keep this Canadian mining company out because it's a very large open pit mine that's proposed that'll move some villagers and really destroy what is a beautiful area. It's next to an ecological reserve. But they understood that it would take a long time. We've had to methodically worked through some very complex legal papers, and then had some good news when the mining company and the Toronto Stock Exchange announced that they wouldn't do what companies in this situation usually do, which is argue it should be in some other jurisdiction. Because one problem with these multinational situations is the companies can say, oh, it shouldn't be in this court, it should be in that court over there in Ecuador or in Barbados where there's a subsidiary or in the United States. They can hop around jurisdictions, but we seem to have got past that, which is a major step forward. And then yesterday we were in court because the companies, as predicted, went to the court to ask that the case be thrown out before any evidence is heard. We knew that would happen, so we argued that, and it was quite special to have Marcia and Polivio and Israel there. They're all folks who were shot at or attacked or threatened by mining company security thugs, we allege. And so the judge, we argued quite vigorously. We expect a decision in a few weeks. Given what's at stake, I suspect there'll be an appeal. But it's pretty special because not only were they there in court, and I mentioned that to the judge, but they are making a very, very real progress.
Now, in January of 2010, the Toronto Stock Exchange actually delisted the Copper Mesa Mining Company from the stock exchange, and as a result, the company lost the majority of its stock value over the next 48 hours. Two questions about that. Number one, was that delisting by the Toronto Stock Exchange a result of pressure put on by this lawsuit? And number two, is this something that the Toronto Stock Exchange normally does, or was it unique in this case?
The delisting of Copper Mesa was very, very fascinating. The company's been in trouble for a while. I think that there's been some good moves by the Ecuadorian government to reduce their hopes of getting a mine there. They failed to file the required financial reports and so forth. I think they were running out of money. I'm speculating there. And the lawsuit may have had something to do with it. I mean, if the directors are being sued personally, it kind of removes the incentive to push it forward. So it may have been a mixture of factors, but it's a very good thing from their point of view, because these mining ventures often are sort of long shot scrambles by small mining companies. They go in and hire thugs and cause the damage to the community and the environment, and then if things go bad, they just disappear. That's part of the problem, and so that's why we've sued the directors as well, so that there should be some personal accountability here in Canada, and not just being able to, you know, say, oh, okay, this company's in trouble, let's forget about this one and start another one and try again.
I want to get to that question of accountability in just a second. Let me ask you first, though, were you surprised when you saw the Toronto Stock Exchange delist the Copper Mesa company?
We were surprised, yes, and we knew the company was in trouble, and but that was a bit surprising, and you know, you never really want to wish grief on anyone, but it was rather satisfying given what it seems the company has done to our clients.
And did that action translate into the Copper Mesa ceasing and desisting from its activities in the Ecuadorian region?
It looks like it's stalled for now, and that's good. But part of the way these things work is if folks think there's a big mineral deposit there in the mountains, whether it actually is true or not, they can try again. They can keep coming back. And part of this lawsuit is to establish accountability so that that kind of easy ride doesn't look so easy anymore. And so the folks there and the environment there, they can start to rest a little better from fear of, you know, thugs coming in financed from thousands of kilometers away. And when we had dinner with everybody last night after the court hearing, which was great, they were saying that some of the damage from what the company has done in terms of relationships in the community are starting slowly to repair. Hopefully that's a good sign. One of the good things here is this isn't a case where there's an open pit mine that's wrecking the environment and we're just trying to claim compensation. They actually have stopped it so far, and it's as beautiful there as it ever was.
That's very, very promising results of your action so far, and I'm sure that that has come as a result of a lot of hard work on yours and the villagers' part. I wanted to ask you the question. A couple of months ago on this program, we interviewed a Member of Parliament, John McKay from Scarborough Gilwood. He was introducing a bill before Parliament, Bill C-300, which was intended to put a little bit of accountability into the operations of Canadian mining companies over acting over jurisdictional boundaries. Have you seen any change in the attitude of Canadian companies from the results of what has happened with your case? And this bill in question, Bill C-300, do you have any comments on the bill itself?
The bill is a great step forward. I think it's probably... in an ideal world, we would have the more accountability because it tends to have some restrictions on the teeth it has, but it's a very good step forward. Whether it'll proceed now, I don't know, because and I'm not an expert on Parliament, but I think the Conservative Party now has a majority in the Senate, and I think that might have implications for a private member's bill that might either way otherwise make it through the House of Commons.
No, that is exactly the case facing that bill, C-300. It still has to get through the Senate, and the Conservatives are firmly entrenched against the passing of this bill and are going to use all their senatorial tactics to make sure that this bill does not pass. What I was asking you, and you very, very accurately responded, was that is it a good sign to see that there are Canadian members of Parliament who are recognizing this as a problem and pushing forward legislation to address these issues?
Yes, and hopefully that'll be an up curve on that, that more MPs will begin to see gradually the magnitude of the problem. This hurts Canadians in a lot of ways because, as some press reports recently have shown, people in many countries see Canadian mining companies as very bad ambassadors of Canada. Mm. And that's something that Canadians should think about. And I made some of those points in court yesterday because the mining companies are very quick to say, oh, if you impose any restrictions or accountability, that'll really damage Canadian mining business. And I said, they're damaging Canadian mining business by their actions in the longer term and the country as well. And it's possible that more ordinary voters on the street and more MPPs or MPs will say, wait a minute, this is actually hurting us all. We better put more accountability in place.
Well, you got it exactly correct. The question of profits for the mining companies might be the concern of the company executives themselves, and that's one of the reasons why these two Copper Mesa company directors have been named in this lawsuit. But the fact of the matter is the actions of the Canadian mining companies in these communities in Ecuador, in Colombia, in and throughout Latin America do more than just hurt the image of the Canadian mining companies, they damage the image of the entire country of Canada as well. Because if you're an Ecuadorian villager, I'm not going to pretend to speak for Ecuadorian villagers, that is what you're here for. But if you're an Ecuadorian villager and you see a Canadian company come into your region, then your impression of Canada is that it is basically a for-profit monster. And I don't want people to get that image of Canada, no matter where they are throughout the world.
That's right. And imagine how you would feel as the, you know, Mercia, and they have these thugs in bulletproof vests with guns marching up to them when they were protesting and start spraying them with pepper spray and shooting at them. And they know that this is Canadian mining company, or at least as far as they know, it's a Canadian mining company, and they know the funds come from TSX, it appears. And so what are you going to think about Canada if that happens to you?
Mm. Now,
they ask, do the people in Canada know about this? Do they realize what's going on? Is this really what Canadians are like? They ask this.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you one thing that we've discussed on this program many times is that precisely because Canadians over the last decade or last decades have not spoken out en masse about the actions of Canadian mining companies in and throughout Latin America, in and throughout Africa, is precisely because Canadians have not spoken out in defense of the ecosystem, in defense of the villagers. It's precisely because of that that the Canadian government has recently felt secure in bringing the same ecological devastation right to Canada with the tar sands. That's that's one point that we're pretty strong about, that if you let other places be abused, then sooner or later you're going to face the same abuse yourself. And I think that's what Canadian citizens are realizing right now. Let me just ask you one question very briefly before we have to leave here. Will the actions that your group has been going through, the battles that your group has been fighting, and the battles that your group has been winning over the last years, will this set precedents for other communities throughout the world that are facing fallout from Canadian mining companies?
It might, and I know that Marcia and Polivio and Carlos, they hope so. They have gone through a lot and worked incredibly hard and at personal risk, and they're very clear. We hope that this can show other people that it can be done, show people all over the world that this can be done, that they don't have to be victims to mining companies from thousands of kilometers away. And so, they certainly hope so.
Okay. Where does it go from here, Murray Klippenstein?
Well, I think that we all know at this end there will be more years of legal battles, appeals. One of the things about the mining companies is they can take many procedural steps in court and slow things down, and that's a part of the equation. So we're going to march forward. As I say, whatever the decision is on this particular motion, I suspect there'll be an appeal and perhaps an appeal from that, and then we'll move on. But it's very good for them to sit in court and actually see their points presented right here in Canada. That's very invigorating for them, and so they are certainly ready to continue.
Okay. Murray Klippenstein, lawyer representing the Ecuadorian village that is suing Copper Mesa, two of its executives, and the Toronto Stock Exchange. Thank you very much for joining us on the program today. And please, please relay our solidarity to Marcia, Carlos, and Israel, the three community activists from the Intag area of Ecuador, and let them know that we are with them in spirit, if not in body.
Great. And Polivio as well for them right now. But I certainly will. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you. And make sure to, and we will make sure to keep in touch with you and stay updated on this story as it goes, because as you say, it just may be a precedent for other communities to follow the example of the steps that you have taken in dealing with this Copper Mesa mining company.
Thank you very much.